Hermanos y hermanas, es un buen honor visitar a ustedes. Yo podría charlar, comunicar en español, pero no puedo enseñar en español. Por eso, es un lástima, qué lástima. Pero tengo ayuda del hermano, por eso a empezar en inglés. Okay. So good to be with you this morning. Yes, esta noche, gracias. Actually, the brother was not exactly right. El hermano no estaba correcto. Okay. I'm not a member of the church in San Diego. After teaching chemistry and physics for 35 years, I retired at the age of 63. And then I started to do even more than ever before. I said, más como antes. Yeah? Okay. So, my wife and I, we moved to another city, to Bakersfield, California, to lead a church there. And then 2 months ago, we moved to plant a brand new church. So when we retire, we begin to do even more than ever before for God. Okay, so while we're trying to start the PowerPoint, let me start the lesson. By the way, I have no notes, so if the PowerPoint doesn't work, we have a problem, so hopefully it'll work. So I'm going to talk this afternoon about why I believe the Bible is inspired by God. Why I believe we can trust the reliability of the Bible. Okay, so the title is The Reliability of the Bible. Why we can trust that the Bible is from God. Now, probably for many of you, this is not a big problem. For many of you, you grew up believing the Bible is from God. And perhaps you never even doubted the Bible was from God. But then you got out into the real world. You go to the university. And people say all kinds of things about the Bible. And then we have the internet. The internet. People say things like this. You can't trust the Bible. Someone changed it. Someone changed the Bible. They say Emperor Constantine, he changed the Bible. And part of the church had one idea, another part of the church had another idea. And there were many different gospels. And finally, one group won and they suppressed all the others. So I want to show you why we can trust the text of the New Testament. So I want to talk about why we can trust the manuscripts of the Bible.
confiar en esos textos bíblicos.
And also the canon of scriptures.
Y lo que se conoce como el canon de las escrituras, ya los diferentes libros que conocemos actualmente como parte de la Biblia.
The canon of scriptures is who picked what should be in the New Testament. So I want to talk about some of the manuscripts we have available. For example, we have the Chester Beatty Papyrus. It's from the 2nd century BC. And here we have a manuscript of Philemon from about 300 AD. This papyrus is in Manchester. It's called the Rylands Papyrus. It's a fragment of the Book of John from 125 AD. The Book of John was written around 80 AD. So this copy is from only 45 years later. I actually saw that. I went to that museum. Some people go to Manchester to see the stadium of Manchester United. For me, that's boring. This is exciting. There are so many more manuscripts. This is part of the Gospel of John from 150 AD. And then in Dublin, there's a museum with dozens of manuscripts. A whole room full of manuscripts from the 2nd, 3rd, and 4th century. This is part of Matthew from the Magdalena Library at Oxford University. And then in the Chester Beatty Museum, like I said, in Dublin, there's a room full of these. So the enemies of Christianity say, oh, you can't trust the Bible because it got changed. The Muslims say that it's been changed very much. But the fact is we have many, many manuscripts, even from the 2nd and 3rd century. Now, all of those are fragments. Because the earliest New Testament manuscripts were made from papyrus. It's like paper. It doesn't last very long. But then in the 4th century, they started to make codices out of vellum, out of the skin of lambs. And then we have even more evidence. For example, the Codex Sinaiticus. It's the entire New Testament and the entire Old Testament in Greek. It's in the British Library. It's in the British Library. Actually, I went to the British Library.
También fui a
and I took this picture.
Tomé una foto.
And then the guy says, oh, you're not supposed to do that. And I said, sorry. But there's more. There's the Vatican manuscript. You can guess where that is. It's in the Vatican. And it's an entire New Testament in Greek. Now again, people said, oh, the Bible is corrupt. The Bible is corrupted. The problem with that is the evidence says that's impossible. To give you an idea of the kind of evidence we have, let's compare the Bible, especially the New Testament, to other ancient documents. For example, maybe we read the writings of, oops, sorry about that. There we go. For example, maybe we read the writings of Aristotle. People read Aristotle, they never doubt whether it's actually written by Aristotle. There's no skepticism about that. But notice, we only have five copies of all of his writings, only five copies. And the oldest is 1,450 years after the original. He wrote about 350 BC, and the oldest copy is 1,180.
So Aristotle escribió 300 años antes de Cristo, sin embargo, esas copias las últimas superaron 1,400 y algo de nuestra era.
Nobody questions the reliability of the writings of Julius Caesar.
Nadie cuestiona la fiabilidad del texto de Julio César.
I studied Latin in high school. I remember we read Julius Caesar. Nobody ever doubts that's reliable. But we only have 10 copies. And the oldest one is 950 years after he wrote. This is true of every ancient document. This is true of every ancient writing. With one exception. The New Testament. In that case, we have 8,000 manuscripts. And the time between the original and the copies we use to make our New Testament, 50 years. But people say, oh, you can't trust the New Testament. Because everybody knows it got changed. And you know, the church, the people, they didn't like it, so they changed it here and there. Es una mentira. It's a lie. Well, why do people say that? Think about it. Why do people say that? Maybe because they don't like what it says. But maybe they don't like what it says. Maybe it challenges their life. Oh, there is one other ancient document for which we have thousands of copies. The Old Testament, obviously. But see, that's not the only evidence. Because we have the writings of Polycarp.
Porque tenemos evidencias de los sacerdotes de la iglesia.
sacerdotes, líderes, no sacerdotes.
Los padres.
Todos son sacerdotes, ¿ok? Pero líderes. Son sacerdotes también, sí. Ok. Ignatius.
So, empezamos con Ignacio.
Writing in the year 115 A.D.
So, Ignacio en el año 150 de nuestra era.
And he quotes from Matthew and John and Luke.
Cita en sus escritos a los evangelios de Mateo, de Juan y de Lucas.
Polycarp,
Policarpo,
who actually met the Apostle John,
que tuvo la oportunidad de encontrarse físicamente con el Apóstol Juan.
In his writings,
en sus escritos,
he quotes from Matthew, Mark, Luke, Acts, 1 and 2 Corinthians, Galatas, Efesios, Filipenses, Tesalónica. Casi cada libro del Nuevo Testamento. And there are so many more examples.
Now,
all of them were quoting the Bible in the second century. So if you believe the enemies of Christianity, that somebody later changed the New Testament, what about all these quotes from the New Testament? You can reproduce almost the entire New Testament from quotes. In the second, third, and fourth century. So why do people say you can't really trust the New Testament? I think you better ask those people to explain what they're talking about. Because there's only two possibilities. Either they have no idea what they're talking about, or they're lying. So when people say you can't trust the New Testament to be the original writings, you should probably be very skeptical of that. Now, as far as trusting our New Testament, there's really two questions. The Greek text that's used to make our Spanish Bibles,
los tres textos que conforman el nuestra Biblia,
are they the exact same as the original?
¿Son realmente exactamente lo mismo que el texto original?
And the other question is, how was it decided what books would even be in the New Testament? By the way, when they made copies, errors happen. People say there are like 100,000 errors in our New Testaments. What they don't tell you is, well, there's 8,000 manuscripts. And almost all these changes are like a spelling. Or the order of two words is switched. Or they do the same line twice. Or they skip a line. But we have 8,000 manuscripts. Now, there are a very small number of examples of actual changes. For example, if you read in 1 John chapter 5. 1 John chapter 5. It says, these three testify, the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit. These three testify, the Father, the Son, and the Holy
Spirit.
It says that in the version Antigua.
Antigua versión.
But if you look at the NVI, the New International Version. That part's not in there.
Which part there?
These three testify, the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit. It's not in there. And you say, well, how did that happen? Well, it turns out every manuscript before 800 AD doesn't have that. That means somebody added it later. Oh no, I can't trust the Bible. That's not what it means. Because we have thousands of manuscripts. And we can compare and produce an almost perfect New Testament. But what about the canon of scriptures? Gracias. Peligroso. Okay. What about the list of New Testament books?
The text of the Old Testament?
No, the canon, the list. How were those books chosen? I mean, you know, there's 27. Who decided what would be in the New Testament and what did not? But we have plenty of evidence of that. The evidence says by 100 AD, all four Gospels were being circulated together as one group. Because we can see the people who quoted it. When I write a sermon, first I quote from Matthew, and then I do Luke, and then I do John after that, because that's the order they're in. So all four Gospels were together and being read in the churches by 100 AD. Fact. Also, before 100 AD, there was a group of most of Paul's letters that were circulated together as well. Paul's letter. And by 150 AD, the 27 books of the New Testament were almost completely decided and it never changed. And that's what the evidence says. Irenaeus, an early church father, said the four Gospels are the pillars of the church. Los cuatro pilares. Yeah. Now, many people say, oh, there's many other Gospels that were written. There's the Gospel of Thomas. People say many other Gospels were written. There's the Gospel of Thomas. The Gospel of Judas, the Gospel of Mary, there's many other Gospels. By the way, it's true. But these were written in the 2nd or 3rd century. There's no evidence that any of them were ever written in the 1st century. One thing I know for sure, Judas did not write the Gospel of Judas. And it has crazy ideas in there. In the Gospel of Thomas, the baby Jesus is speaking, and he turns like a clay pigeon into a live pigeon. Even these heretic Gnostics, even they never said they were part of the Bible. What about the Old Testament? Can we trust the Old Testament? This is a manuscript of Psalms from the Dead Sea Scrolls. Now, before
1947,
the oldest Hebrew manuscripts were from about 800 AD.
El manuscrito hebreo más antiguo era acerca de 1880.
So they're written maybe 500 BC.
Quizás escribieron unos 500 años antes de Cristo.
And the oldest manuscripts we have were from about 800 or 900 AD.
Y los nuevos manuscritos eran acerca de los años 800 y 900.
Well over 1,000 years. During that time, significant changes possibly could have happened. But then in 1947, the Dead Sea Scrolls were discovered. Here's cave number 4. They found thousands of manuscripts. Many of them were written by this group known as the Essenes. Essenes, a Jewish group. But hundreds of them were from the Old Testament. Every book in the Old Testament except Esther had at least some. We have an entire scroll of Isaiah from 150 BC. Yes. And another one from almost 200 BC. Now let me explain what the significance here. Before the Dead Sea Scrolls, the time between when they were written and when we had a manuscript it was quite a bit more than 1,000 years. But then with the Dead Sea Scrolls, instead of 1,300 years, now it's 300 years. And when they analyzed the scroll of Isaiah, between 900 AD and 200 BC, only a few words were different. So I also trust the Old Testament. But really, that's not even the only evidence. For example, we have what's called the Septuagint. Septuagint. Septuaginto. It's a translation of the Old Testament from Hebrew to Greek.
Okay, yes.
Septuaginto.
Es una traducción del Antiguo Testamento del hebreo al griego.
And it was made in 200 BC. So the entire Old Testament was translated into Greek. Before 200 BC. It's like somebody took a photograph of the Hebrew Old Testament. So you can compare the manuscripts from 900 AD and then you have the Dead Sea Scrolls, and then we have the Septuagint from 200 BC, and by the way, the Old Testament was also translated into the Syrian language in 500 BC. So again, we have great confidence in the reliability of the Old Testament. So if people say, oh, you really can't trust the reliability of the Bible, now be nice. Be nice. Don't be rude. But say, I think you don't know what you're talking about. Okay, now, more reasons I believe in the reliability of the Bible. Reason number one is the manuscript evidence. No, the manuscripts. The manuscripts. Reason number two is archaeology and history. Now, if you listen to the atheists and the Muslims and the skeptics, they'll tell you there was no such person as Moses. Abraham wasn't a real person. No, didn't even exist. These are just a bunch of fables that people made up. But then you look at the archaeological evidence. For example, think about this. If you look at the archaeological record, Abraham, Moses, David, Hezekiah,
Moses, David, Hezekiah.
When would you start to see physical evidence of the Jews? Would you find big buildings that Abraham built? Obviously, no. He lived in a tent. Would you find big cities of the Jews during the time of Moses? No, they were slaves living in huts. When would you start to see actual physical evidence you could dig out of the ground? Well, when did the Jews start to build cities? From the time of David. So before the time of David, you're not going to dig up cities from the Jews, obviously. But you can ask if what we learn from archaeology agrees with what we read in the Old Testament.
de lo que podemos encontrar como evidencia de lo que podemos saber.
And that's exactly what happens.
Y es lo que pasa.
For example, according to the Bible,
según la Biblia,
Abraham was born in Ur, the city of Ur.
Abraham nació en la ciudad de Ur.
And it seems like it must have been a large city.
Y eso suena como una ciudad.
And it says Abraham left it behind.
Como una ciudad que no era la gran cosa, porque Abraham dejó esa ciudad.
And then he went to the city of Haran.
Y se marchó hacia la ciudad de...
It seems to be more like on the frontier.
Una ciudad que estaba un poco más cerca de la frontera.
Now, is this a story that was just made up?
So, la historia de Abraham, cuando Dios lo llamó de su ciudad y hasta otra ciudad que Dios lo iba a entregar, eso suena como una ciudad, como una historia inventada.
Well, this is the ziggurat from Ur.
Y esta es la iglesia arqueológica de ese sitio llamado la ziggurat, la ciudad de Ur.
It was built about 2000 BC.
Esa estructura se construyó acerca del año 2000 antes de Cristo.
And Ur was the largest city in Mesopotamia in 2000 BC.
Y en el año 2000 antes de Cristo, Ur era la ciudad más grande de Mesopotamia.
And guess what?
Y adivinen.
They've also discovered the city of Haran.
O también tenemos esa evidencia de la ciudad de Haran.
That's where Abraham went next. And Haran was destroyed 1,500 years before Christ. Now the skeptics say Genesis was written around 500 BC. And they just made it all up. By that time, Haran hadn't even existed for 1,000 years. So if Genesis was written so much late, how do they know about the city of Haran? Now this is a tablet from a city called Ebla. Ebla. And it's a city in the area between Iraq and Syria. And it has tablets from 2100 BC. Some of the names found on the Ebla tablets include Abraham, Sarah, Nahor, the father of Abraham, and Terah. Now, the people mentioned in these tablets, they're not the biblical people. These are common names. In other words, the names Genesis gives to the people in Genesis are names that were used in Mesopotamia around 2000 BC, which is when Abraham and Sarah and Terah and Nahor lived there. So think about a name that nobody ever uses anymore. If somebody said, yeah, I met somebody on campus named whatever that name would be, you go, that's crazy. Nobody uses that name anymore. So this is evidence that Abraham and Sarah lived in Mesopotamia around 2000 BC. Now, if you read in Genesis, it talks about the area around the Dead Sea. Remember the story where Abraham says to Lot? Abraham says to Lot? Abraham is up in the mountains in Judea. He says, I'll take the bad land. He says, Lot, you take the really good land down by the Dead Sea. Now, if you go to Israel today, if you go to the Dead Sea, is one of the hottest places in the world. One of the hottest places in the world. Hot. There's nothing there. There's a reason they call it the Dead Sea. So if you read the story of Genesis, you think, that's crazy. Now in Genesis, there's a story about the five cities around the Dead Sea who fought a war with this guy named Chedorlaomer of Elam. You think, five cities around the Dead Sea? There's nothing there. Nobody's ever been there. Archaeologists didn't even bother to study there. But then a few years ago, an archaeologist said, well, let's just try it, see what we find. Here's what they discovered. Up until about 2100 BC, there was irrigation. And there were these rivers that, it was a very dry area even then. But there were rivers that came down from the highlands. And they had large areas of irrigation and a lot of agriculture. And they discovered a number of cities. Guess how many cities they discovered? 5 cities. All 5 cities were destroyed about 2100 BC. By fire. And never ever occupied again. The area became almost completely desolate. Oh, okay. See, the Bible, when you test it, always proves to be consistent with the evidence. These are the ruins of Sodom. There was ashes like this deep. Outside of the city, there was a cemetery that had wooden buildings, the madera, buildings of wood, and they were burned. But they were burned not from the bottom, but from the top. Normally, when you burn down a city, you burn it from the bottom up. But these buildings were burned from the top down. I think fire fell from the sky. Okay, another example. You know, when you read in the book of Genesis and also Exodus, You have the Hittites, the Perizzites, the Jebusites, the Girgashites, the Canaanites, and all those ites. The ones that are mentioned the most are the Hittites. Now the skeptics of the Bible said, Hittites, yeah, right. Jebusites, Canaanites, Girgashites. Those are just names. You know, Uriah, he was a Hittite, right? Uriah, the Hittite. And then they discovered the city of Hattusha. A very large city. And it turns out now scientists understand there were three large powers. And around 1400 BC, it was Assyria, Egypt, and the Hittites. And here is the gate to the city of Hattusha. You can actually study the Hittite language. In one university, you can actually get a major in Hittite studies. I believe in the Hittites, the Jebusites, the Canaanites. Now, do we have any evidence of the Girgashites? The Girgashites. Just another group, the Girgashites. Not yet. But would you bet against the Bible? I'm not gonna. Now, one interesting fact. You know, there were all these kings in Israel, right? But you never find any statues. So, if these were kings, why are there no statues? Because God said, don't make statues. So they didn't make statues. But this is found in Assyria. It was made by King Shalmaneser.
The
840 BC, antes de Cristo. This is Jehu. King Jehu. He's bowing down to Shalmaneser. King Jehu.
Yeah.
El Rey Jehu.
Jehu.
He's bowing down to King Shalmaneser. I took this picture. It's in the British Museum. I'm not sure if I was supposed to take that picture, but I did. Now, in the Old Testament it says that Jehu submitted to Shalmaneser. It doesn't say he physically went there and bowed down to him. Maybe he did, maybe he didn't. This may be symbolical. You know, Shalmaneser saying, yeah, he bowed down to me. Here's another one. It's found in northern Israel in the city of Dan. Now you have to understand how skeptical the enemies of Christianity are. Until recently they said, there was no King David, there's no evidence. But then in the city of Dan, they found this inscription. A friend of mine, John Wilson, he was in that city the day that was found.
When,
in the ancient world, they would tear down a city and then would take the rocks and then build a new city. So this was just a rock that was in the wall. And here's what the inscription says. Now this is the king of Aram. Aramea, the king of Aram. The king of Syria. And he says, I killed Joram, the son of Ahab, and I also killed this other guy, the son of Jeroboam, and the son of the house of David. Now what this means is, there really was a King David, and he had many, many descendants, which includes Joram. So again, we have proof. Positive proof. Not only that David existed, but that he was the first of a line of many kings. Now it says he killed Joram. That's not what the Old Testament says. The Old Testament said that he injured Joram. And Joram fled from the battle. And later, Jehu killed him. Here's a question. Which is the more believable story? This story? Or the Bible story? That question is so easy. Obviously, the Bible story is more accurate. Because it always is. There is no ancient document which is accurate like the Old Testament. Brothers and sisters, that's a fact. Now, can I prove everything that happened in the Old Testament? Definitely not. I cannot prove that David killed Goliath. I can't prove that David killed Goliath. How could you prove it? Maybe find a body with a, you know, a hole in the skull? How would you know that's Goliath? And how would you know David killed him? See, I can't prove everything in the Old Testament. But here's the truth. Every time any evidence is found, which could either support the Old Testament,
evidenciando que el Antiguo Testamento dice.
Or disprove the Old Testament.
Oh, que desaprueba lo que dice.
It always supports the Old Testament.
Lo que termina sucediendo es que siempre las evidencias arqueológicas terminan comprobando lo que el Antiguo Testamento ya dice.
I have a couple more examples, but honestly, we probably don't need very many more examples.
Quizás podríamos ir viendo muchísimos más ejemplos, pero.
This is the prism of Sennacherib.
Este es el cilindro de Sennacherib o de Prisma.
And here's the boast of Sennacherib. The boast of Sennacherib, the prideful boast of Sennacherib.
Oh, okay. Eso era lo que termina siendo como lo que era el orgullo de ese pueblo.
It's in the British Museum.
También está en el Museo Británico.
It looks really big, right?
Yes. Parece muy antiguo, right?
But it's actually only about this big.
Sí. Parece grande.
And the writing is very small.
Y las letras son muy pequeñas.
And here is the boast of Sennacherib.
Mira lo que dice aquí, Sennacherib.
He says, I destroyed all the cities of Judea.
Yo destruí todas las ciudades de Judea.
And Hezekiah.
Y Isaías.
I put him in Jerusalem.
Y lo puse en Jerusalén.
Like a bird in a cage. You know, that's really interesting. Because if you read 2 Kings, it says that Sennacherib captured all the cities of Judea. And he laid siege to Jerusalem. Now, does it say he defeated Jerusalem? Does it say that he defeated
Jerusalem?
Does it say he killed Hezekiah? It's interesting. The story ends right there. So what happened next? Well, read 2 Kings. We know what happened to the most powerful general in the world. Why could he not conquer Jerusalem? Read about it in 2 Kings 18. His entire army was destroyed by God. What we have here is evidence of a miraculous event. Just like with Sodom, right? With Sodom, earlier example. Yeah, we have indirect evidence of a Bible miracle. Indirect. More examples. I'll skip this one. This is one of my favorite. If you read Daniel chapter 5, it mentions King Belshazzar. You know, with the writing on the wall?
Right?
Daniel chapter 5? What he was doing was he was having a drunken party. And they took the cup from the temple of God and were toasting pagan gods and getting drunk using the items from God's temple. Using the items from God's temple. And the finger comes out and it's writing on the wall. And you know, his Belshazzar is shaking. I think he might have wet his pants. I don't know. And then he says, whoever can interpret the writing will have the third place in my kingdom. Now let's talk about the history. Up until recently, all the ancient historians agreed the last king of Babylon was not Belshazzar. It was Nabonidus. Nabonido. They all say Nabonido. The last king of Babylon. The Bible says, no, it's Belshazzar. So all the critics say, typical. You know, Daniel is just a story. You know, just made it up. And then they found an inscription in the city of Ur. It explains what happened. What happened is this. Nabonidus killed the king. Nabonidus, he killed the king. And he was not descended from Nebuchadnezzar. He was not legitimate. He was not so his... It was in doubt that he should be king. So he married the daughter of Nebuchadnezzar. And he had a son. And guess what his name was? Belshazzar. But Belteshazzar was the grandson of Nebuchadnezzar. So he called him, I don't know how to translate, a regent king? A regent? It's like sort of a second king. He said, I'm king, but my son Belshazzar, he's also king. And according to the ancient records, he left. And Belshazzar was there. Now remember the story. First of all, the skeptics said, Belshazzar, not even a real person. All the other historians said, not even a real person. All the other historians said, not even a real person. But read the story. He said, if you read the writing on the wall, I'll give you the third place in the kingdom. Why not the second place in the kingdom? Well, who had the second place in the kingdom? That was Belshazzar. So he offered the third place in the kingdom. Which confirms the accuracy of dead. I could give many more examples, but I think that's enough. You know, people say there's all these contradictions in the Bible. I wish I had time to talk about that. There are no contradictions in the Bible. Some things that might seem that way, but honestly, there are no contradictions in the Bible. I wish I had time to talk about that, but I don't. And there is so much more evidence supporting the Bible. What about all the prophecies?
¿Qué tal las profecías?
The prophecy the Messiah would be born in Bethlehem.
Acerca de que el Mesías debería de nacer en Belén.
Well, where was Jesus born?
¿Dónde nació Jesús?
In Bethlehem.
En Belén.
In Zechariah. Zechariah. It says the Messiah would be betrayed for 30 pieces of silver. So how much was Jesus betrayed for? 30 pieces of silver. In Psalm 22 it says the Messiah would be pierced in his hands and his feet. So how was Jesus killed? By piercing his hands and his feet. People who don't believe the Bible is inspired by God, who don't believe it's reliable, I say, what have you been reading? Where'd you come up with this idea? Where'd you come up with this idea? Now, I believe many things by faith.
Yo creo en muchas cosas por la fe.
Por ejemplo, yo creo en la eternal life. I believe in heaven. Yo creo en el cielo.
Yo creo en el cielo, por ejemplo.
I have no evidence of heaven.
Yo no tengo evidencia o probar que el cielo existe.
There are a lot of things in the Bible I don't have evidence for. But I have much evidence to believe the Bible is reliable. So that's why I believe the Bible is reliable. Thank you for listening, and thank you for being here tonight.
Muchos piensan que los científicos no pueden creer en Dios.